And then the second verse is kind of a continuation of the ignorant person and the unrefined person. The person who has no refinement and who is ignorant, how do they function and how the wise person? See, everywhere Krishna gives us the two. This is how the wise person functions. This is how the ignorant, the choice is yours. He doesn't say, you have to do this or thou shalt suffer in hell. No, there is nowhere like that. There is no instruction, there is no commandment, there is nothing. It is just choices. Constantly Krishna is giving Arjuna choices. You have this choice, my son. You do this, you will get this. You don't do this, you will get this. So you choose. So very, very beautifully, that's why this Bhagavad Gita is such a beautiful instructional manual. Because there are zero commandments. Even at the end of the 18th chapter, after 700 verses, Krishna's mouth must have been tired by talking 700 verses. Even at the end, he says, okay, I have given this knowledge. Yat echasi tat kuru. Do what you wish. Again, nowhere does he say that thou shalt fight or thou shalt follow my instructions. Nowhere he says. He says, after these 700 verses, I have told you all I could. And now it's your choice. You choose. Yat echasi tat kuru. Whatever you wish, you do. And then you will suffer the consequences. So the choices are all ours. Lord does not make any choices for us. So this the 11th verse very beautifully again gives us the difference between the wise person and the unwise person. Yatanto yoginaschainam. Pashyantyatmanyavasthitam. Yatantopyakritatmanah. Nainam pashyantyachetasah. So yatanta yogina. Yogina means yogis are not those who do those physical exercises. When Krishna uses the word yogi, he talks about yunja. Yunja means united. So one whose mind is always united with the Lord, with the higher, with the self, he calls them yogi. Yoginaha is the plural. Yatantaha. So they work. Cha ainam. And what are they doing? Pashyanti atmani avasthitam. They see avasthitam, the one who is stationed, atmani, who is stationed within him. So within me is stationed the Lord, Bhagavan, the Atman, Paramatman, the Brahman, the consciousness. So the wise person work seeing, constantly seeing the Lord. So the last words we had talked more about the wise person, how does they function. So this can be taken in this verse also, the one who has the eye of wisdom, who has constantly seen the Lord. Pashyanti atmani avasthitam. So they work constantly seeing the Lord functioning through them, seeing his presence. But how about the others? Yatantaha api. Also, they also work. Who? Akritatmanaha. Akritatmanaha means the unrefined. Unrefined, who are not. Refined means who don't have culture, who don't have the right behavior. You know, that's why they say, oh, he's such an uncultured person. He's so unrefined. He's so rough. He's so crude. So the people who are crude, who are rough, na ainam pashyanti, and they do not see the self. Why? Achetasaha. They are ignorant. Chetas means mind. So their mind, they do not use that. They say, no, use your mind. Use your brain. So they don't use their mind. So that's why they're called achetasaha. So this verse, I'll spend mostly talking about the ignorant. Last verse, we talked about the wise. I thought that way you can see how the two people function. So the wise we have already talked about. So how do the ignorant person behave? And why do we have ignorance? So they say Maya, that is God's power of delusion, has two qualities. Avarana and Vikshepa. Avarana means veiling and Vikshepa means agitation. So when I do not see a thing as it is because of ignorance, then I project something upon it. Like there is this man coming and I say, This man, he looks like a crook. You know, you have never met him, you have not seen him, or all people of this particular race are like that. You know, because we have this preconceived notion, this ignorance, so we project upon it. You know, from all people of this community are like that, all people of this race are like that. In India, we generalize on state, you know, all people from this state are like that. And we are very good at that. You know, we generalize automatically without even thinking, you know, all. So avarana means when you don't know something and you project, again, like a rope and the snake. When you don't see the rope as a rope, you project the snake. So not knowing the facts, or sometimes, you know, we know half the facts. We know a little bit, and then we generalize and we judge that individual. And then no matter what that individual does, we never can give that person an opportunity to prove himself. Why? Because once we have avarana veiling, then we get vikshep, then we get agitation, and then we project because of our ignorance. So that is what they're saying, that people who are achetasaha, who are ignorant, they become unrefined, akritatmanaha. So not knowing the truth, we project the ignorance, and then we don't see the Lord, and then we see the people, and then we have all the problems. And they're like the snake, you know, when I see, then I get scared. So similarly, I see these people and I have conflicts, whether it's conflict between individuals, between religions, between nations. It's all because of the lack of understanding. I have not understood my religion, I have not understood my prophet, and that is why all the conflicts of the world happen. So what are the conflicts? One is ignorance, cause, that is avarana, and unrefined vikshepa, or agitation or anger. So how do I read, and that's again, unrefinement is the product of the vasanas, because I have pre-existing tendencies and pre-existing ignorance. And so how do I overcome that? So these are some of the points I tried to find. Of course, that, you know, there can be a lot more. One is to be aware of your ego, you know, this ignorance that I have, I am ignorant, and I have this deficit, I have this fault. So, and everybody knows, nobody else needs to point out. You know, maybe somebody gets angry, or somebody is very jealous, or somebody is very greedy, or somebody is very possessive, or somebody is very selfish. So see, what are my negatives? Do I have too much pride and arrogance? Like we said, you know, nirmana moha jita sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kama. So look at these. Or in the 13th chapter, there are so many values that have been given by Krishna. In the 12th chapter, he talks about the qualities of a devotee. Actually, if anybody needs that, I have an email. When I was, you know, I sent it to you also. When we were traveling, somebody, you know, we were sitting in the back of the bus, so I talked to them about the 12th chapter. So somebody listed the qualities of a devotee. What are the qualities of the 12th chapter? So if somebody wants, I can forward that email. So look at these qualities and say, do I have them or not? Or do I have too many negatives? So consciously eradicate. Because without eradicating, no matter all the knowledge you may get, the teacher may talk to you till he's blue in the face, you won't improve. Why? Because your mind cannot focus on the knowledge. Like, there's a Gurudev gives a very beautiful example. He says, like, there is a child, you know, who is in the class and he's playing with a toy. He got a new toy, you know, for his birthday, and he brought it to school. He's not supposed to, and he's in his pocket and he's playing with it. And the teacher is talking, and the teacher can see that the child is not paying attention. His hand is in the pocket and his attention is there. He says, wait, what do you have in your pocket? And then you have to bring the toy. Okay, give it to me and keep it here. The child gets all sad. You know, he says, you know what? This teacher took this toy. Now he's going to go give it to his son. You know, and I'm never going to get it back. He said, that's why when I grow up, I'll become a teacher so I can take all the kids' toys. So, you know, so why? Because his mind, even the teacher is teaching, his attention is on the toy. So similarly, the teacher may be teaching us, but our attention is on our possessions, our money, our power, our house, our children, and all the time the attention is there. So the mind can never turn to the higher, because the mind is always in objects, emotions, and thoughts. How can the mind even have time to think about it? Because I don't have time. I'm so busy working that I don't have time to meditate, I don't have time to pray. So put in the effort and invoke God's grace, because these vasanas are so powerful. Not only I have in this lifetime, but as we have studied, these multiple lifetimes. And so I have so much, so constantly say, Bhagavan, mere se nahi hoga. I cannot do it. Meri naiya tere paar, tu le ja. My boat is in your hands. You only can take me. I can only put the effort, but my effort is very limited. I'm a useless, limited human being. Lord, you are all powerful. And let me see how powerful you are. Can you free me from my vasanas? So invoke his grace. Constantly remember him. Chant his name. Sing bhajans. Listen to songs in your car. Think about his glories. How kind and compassionate. And how compassionate he is that he is here and talking to all of us. And we are listening to this beautiful knowledge from Gurudev and from Krishna himself. It is his compassion that we are all here. I feel so blessed that we are able to all discuss this. So see his grace everywhere. His grace is all the time with you. And invoke his grace. And then do satsang. Sat means good, sang means company. So be in the company of the good. Sat also means God. So be in the company of God, be in the company of saints, be in the company of in a group like this where you can learn, or be in the company of good books. That is also satsang. Before you go to bed at night, sit down and read some good book. You know, don't watch TV, because they had done a study where they found that, I don't know if I told it in this class or the Thursday class, but children who play with their phone or iPad or iPod for an hour before they go to sleep, the sleep gets disturbed. They have a very much disturbed sleep as compared to those who read. So same thing for adults. If you're going to watch TV or your phone or your iPad, because the light is very disturbing to the eyes, you know. So do not use this electronic devices before you go to bed. Just read some good book or listen to some good bhajans, or just lie down and chant his name before you sleep. So satsang, be in the company of good. Get right knowledge. That is the only way to destroy the vasanas, is through knowledge, through love of God, and through service. So serve the world, think, put others first. So with right knowledge, I will serve, I will love God, and I will get the right knowledge, and that's how you destroy the vasanas and come closer to God. And then meditate. Meditation is very, very beneficial in destroying the vasanas. It's the fastest way, and I every week talk about it, and those of you who meditate, I'm sure, have noticed the benefit. And then they say the mind is so disturbed, you know, because our mind is unrefined, it is agitated. Mind is constantly running, and that's especially when we sit for meditation, the mind runs. So I was reading a commentary, and very beautifully the teacher has explained. He says, how do you slow down the mind? It's a very, very beautiful technique. So he gives the example, you know, in the olden days, now of course we have, you know, CDs and DVDs and all, but in the olden days, the movies used to be, you know, wrapped on those spools. You remember that 8mm, 16mm, and there were these two big spools, and then the tape used to run, and then the middle used to break, and then again he has to fix it, and then the movie, we have all gone through that. At least if you have, then means you are old, if you remember that. Where the youngsters don't, if there's any youngsters here, they'll say, what are you talking about? I never heard of them. But anyway, so now how do they make that movie? It's very, very interesting. I didn't think about it, but that's what these wise people, they have this brilliance, they can think about it. So they say that what they do is, like when the hero is taking a flower and giving to the heroine, right? Saying, I love you or not. So it's not, what they do is they do like 1,000 frames. You know, one hero here. So each one is a different frame. And then hundreds of frames, when they run fast, it looks like a spontaneous action. Okay, hero is giving a flower. But actually there are 100 pictures like that. And each one of those pictures, when it's run full speed, or like, I remember when we were children, we used to have these little books with those pictures, and you run it fast and it looks like an action, the boy is running and all, but actually it is the boy is here, then he's here, then he's here, and then it looks like when you move it fast, it's running. I remember we used to play with that. So similarly, the mind is nothing but a series of individual thoughts. It is a series of individual thoughts which, when put together, looks like my mind is agitated. It's called kshanikavad. In Buddhism, they call it kshanikavad. Kshanika means momentarily. In fact, they say the whole world is kshanikavad. It is created and destroyed, created and destroyed, created and destroyed. That is one of the theories in Buddhism.
Mind is a monkey.
Mind
is a monkey.
Mind is a monkey, right. So kshanikavad, that means it is created and destroyed. So constantly thoughts are arising and falling every moment. But because the mind moves so fast, we think that the mind is agitated because the mind is disturbed. So they say break down it into individual thoughts. Instead of letting the mind disturb you, watch the mind. And just as when you break into individual images, then you realize that it's not a continuous movement. It is actually individual images. So observe your mind and then watch how each thought arises. An angry thought, how did it arise? A jealous thought, how did it arise? So break the thought down and then go to the origin. So be a witness of the mind and meditate. And that's why in meditation, so like a movie, watch the mind also like a movie. Okay, my mind is now unhappy. Let it be unhappy. I am not unhappy. The mind is unhappy. Why? Because it didn't get the chocolate or the pizza, or didn't get, you know, this person didn't say I love you. So my mind is unhappy. Okay, let it be unhappy. He doesn't love me or love me. Doesn't make me any different. If he said I love you, I didn't say I love you, doesn't make me any, no, it's okay. Then my mind is miserable, let it be. So when you can do that, watch the mind like a movie, then you automatically you get away from the control of the vasanas. Because the vasanas affect you at the mental level. So that is how you can reduce the vasanas. So that, like the answer to your question. So put effort and invoke the Lord's grace. And be consciously aware of my negatives, whatever negatives I have. Anger, greed, jealousy, selfishness. Constantly work on them. And viparita bhavana, that is another, we teach our children, actually, and when they teach them the 13th chapter, they said viparita bhavana, which also the prayer of Saint Francis. He said, when there is anger, you develop, consciously develop love. Okay. I won't get angry, I'll love people. I won't be jealous, I'll be sharing. I won't be selfish, I'll be unselfish. So develop this viparita bhavana, and that's how you reduce the vasana. And then how do you remove ignorance? Achetasaha. So ignorant people, what do? You go to a teacher, you receive all ours. You receive, you retain, and you recollect. So whatever this knowledge that we have got from Gurudev or from our teachers, listen to it attentively, try to retain it, and then try to recollect it. And the best way is by reading it again. You know, all of you have this commentary. Go home and read the commentary. Or if you wish to listen to the talks, they are available on the website. You can listen to these talks again on firstpower.info. Or another way is you go home and tell somebody, okay, you know, we went to the Gita class, this is what. So try to retain and recollect, because that is the only way this knowledge can become firm, can become pakka. Like, or again, repeated listening, because the same thing has been repeated so many times in the Sunday class, and then when Swami Ishwarananda comes and Vimalji comes. So listening to different acharyas again and again and again, it strengthens that knowledge. So that's how you can retain it and you can recollect. Otherwise, what happens is what you hear, the moment you walk out, the knowledge is gone. So retain, receive, retain, and recollect. We did that in Thursday also. And then resolve. Resolve means decide. Okay, from today onward, I'm going to act the way Krishna wants me to act, the way Gita tells me to act, and apply that in your life. So don't only just leave it in the book. The Gita is not meant just to be appreciated. Oh yeah, you know, Krishna, my God, how beautiful words here. It's not meant for that. He doesn't need our appreciation. He doesn't need our praise. He wants you to apply that. That is the whole idea of that. Otherwise, there's no point saying wah, 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 and then, you know, forget about it. Apply that in your life. And he says, reclaim your status. You are that infinite Brahman up to here in this world. Don't act like a miserable, creature just crawling on the ground. That's what Gurudev says. He says it's like a moth, or it's there. But then he knows, actually, I'm a butterfly. And so he thinks butterfly, butterfly, butterfly. Then one day, he becomes this beautiful, shiny, colorful butterfly flying freely in the world. So you are also that butterfly. You are not that miserable moth. Remember that and reclaim your status as that. And again, it says, withdraw your mind from all these sorrows and problems. Quieten it by contemplating, by meditating. You can withdraw your mind from all these worldly problems. Go within and with a quiet mind when you meditate, when you contemplate. Then you will realize that's what the whole goal of meditation is. It's a spiritual activity. It brings me closer to God. And I realize that God and I are one. He is within me as Om, as consciousness, as Jesus, as Buddha, as Shiva, as Krishna. And, all of them are nothing but that one consciousness. So contemplate upon the words of the Guru, of the Gita, and meditate and apply that in your life. So that is how you remove your ignorance. Ignorance can only be go away with knowledge. It's like darkness. If your room is dark and you say, okay, I'm going to take a bucket and throw bucketfuls of darkness outside. You keep throwing that, darkness will not go. Darkness will only go with you light a lamp. So similarly, ignorance cannot go by doing karma yoga. I do a lot of service or I do bhakti. Oh Lord, remove my ignorance. Oh Lord, remove. Lord is not going to remove your, neither karma yoga nor bhakti will help. Only gyan. Only knowledge can remove ignorance. Bhakti will develop love for God. Karma yoga will, purify your mind. It has its own value. But if you have ignorance, the only way is to go sit in front of a teacher and learn. That's why Upanishad is that go near a teacher. Shad means sit. Ni means underneath. So go to a teacher, sit underneath with humility. And then only the knowledge can flow. So that is, humility is a very, very powerful virtue to have. Be humble. Don't be arrogant. Always pray for the Lord. Oh, give me humility, Lord. No matter how much I achieve, it is all your grace that I have achieved, whatever I have got. So do that, and then alone your ignorance will be removed. Your mind will become pure. Your avarana, veiling will go away, your agitation will go away, and then you will reclaim your status as Satchitananda. Very, very beautiful verses. So I thought we'll talk about the wise person and one about the ignorant person and how to get rid of ignorance and become wise. Any comments, any questions? Or any general questions, if somebody has not even related to Gita, if any questions about spirituality, religion, any, I'll try if I can answer. Yeah.
We constantly talk about realizing the truth and how ignorant we are, but I just wonder if sometimes there's such a focus on how ignorant we are that we believe it and then we in turn act on it, mm-hmm. rather than maybe being a little more positive about that it is possible. But in some respects, it just seems like it's so difficult to ever become a realized person.
No, it is difficult, but it can be done. You just have to put the effort and you have to purify your mind. They make it sound difficult. Like Sri Krishna in the Gita says, out of thousands of people in this world, mm-hmm. only one approaches me. And out of thousands who approach me, only one realizes me. So it is difficult. Why? Because we have so many lifetimes of vasanas. But mainly once you become aware of it and start putting effort, then slowly then His grace comes and He helps. He will then put you in touch with a guru. He will put you in touch with the right knowledge. He will make the opportunities and the situation. And then your growth is very fast. All you have to do is resolve, be aware and put in effort. Then His grace comes. Then it's not difficult. It's not difficult. It seems difficult because we don't take the first step. You know, they say the journey to 1,000 miles start with one step. And that's the problem. We don't take the step because we say it's too hard. You know, it's not going to happen in this lifetime. It's going to happen in multiple lifetimes. And so that's why we worry about it. But this, He says, just start. And His grace comes. But yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, we have to learn to think positive. Don't be miserable. Think positive. Positive thinking is very important. Always look at the things will be fine. Things will work out good. The moment you say things won't work out, they won't work out. If you say, oh, I don't know whether it will happen, it will never happen. But if you say it will happen, I'm fine, I'm confident, then the confidence is very important.
The power of positive thinking.
Yes. Yes. Power of positive thinking. Very much. The movie Secret. I don't know if anybody has seen, but that talks about that. If you haven't seen it, see that. It's a very good movie, Secret. It talks about that, power of positive.
The CD, Secret, CD you are talking about.
Yeah, yeah, the movie, yeah, the movie. Secret. Yeah. CD, it's a scene.
With too much positivism leads to Pollyanna, where this overthinking and the positive will bring up other results and leading to self-deception.
True. Yeah, yeah, obviously. Yeah, if you, it does not have to be self-deception. It's like you are a, you can't lift even a, you know, you can't even climb a pair of, you know, steps, 100 steps. And then you say, I want to climb Mount Everest. That is called deception. You have to be realistic and you have to take one step at a time, you know. Yeah, obviously. Yeah, you're right. That's a, too much positive. But I don't think that anything is too much positive thinking. It's always good. Think, at least I am a very positive thinker. I never think negative. I never used to. And He has always been very kind to me. So I think positive thinking is always good. As long as, yeah, you're not unrealistic. You don't think that I can climb Mount Everest. You know, things like that. Yeah, be realistic. But thinking that things will work out is always better than thinking they won't.
And also, whether it's necessary to, is it necessary to have a guru or self? How about self-knowledge?
No, self-knowledge. Do you have to have a guru to learn golf? Can you go yourself and start hitting the ball? Will you be able to play golf? No, your ball will go everywhere. Or tennis. Or did you have a guru when you went to school in the first grade? Did you have a teacher or you learned ABCD yourself? Yeah, whether you are learning computers or learn to play the piano, somebody throws a piano in front of you, you cannot. So spirituality, you need a guru, you need a teacher. Self-knowledge means it's not going to come from the sky. You say, okay, I'm going to read books. Okay, but books also have been written by some guru, by some teacher. I think having a guru helps, especially if you can connect with some person, it's even better. But if you can read good books, you know, but then you, what you have to do is be careful about what you read and read everything in one particular science. Do not read, one day you read Vedanta, then second day you read Buddhism, and then third day you read some German philosophy by Nietzsche, and then fourth day you read Confucius, and then fifth day you read some other philosopher. Then you will get confused. That's why you need a teacher to guide you. And pick one field of philosophy. If you're going to do Vedanta, only do that. And all books in that field. Otherwise, your mind gets easily diverted and dissipated. You have to focus. So I think having the right knowledge helps guide us. Yeah.
I think also you need a guru because sometimes what you read, you may not understand quite as it should be.
Right.
You misunderstand the literature itself. So somebody needs to explain us if we are understanding it right. That's why I think we need a guru to correct our understanding
yes.
of the scriptures.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, because the scriptures are written in ancient Sanskrit or they're written in Greek and Latin, you know, the Bible and all. So you, even in Bible, you need a priest to interpret it for you, you know, because the language is so obscure. So similarly, Gita is written in Sanskrit. If we didn't have Swami Chinmayananda interpreting, I would at least never know. I would have no idea. I mean, 20 years ago, I didn't even have a word of knowledge about Gita or Sanskrit or anything. I knew nothing. I was totally ignorant. It's only when I met Gurudev And then all the other acharyas of Chinmaya Mission, you know, Swami Ishwarananda and Guruji, Swami Tejomayananda and all of them, Bimalji. That's when at least my knowledge came only through them. I was absolutely zero in this. So Guru is very necessary. You had a question? No, go ahead.
Okay. I had a question about health.
About?
About health, because you mentioned health last week, and I kind of, it took me by surprise, because I thought that when we, this life, you know, we Christians always think of heaven and hell, you get either reward or punishment.
Right.
And I thought that in Hinduism, when you die, you go to heaven, but it's not necessarily a reward or a punishment.
There is heaven and hell too. They have described in our Puranas where they put you in hot oil and they burn you, you know, in that. Or they dip you and take you out, depending. So all those things are there. They're very, very detailed description if you want. Very beautifully they have described. So that will get you scared. You won't do anything wrong after that. Oh yeah, they talk about how they, boiling hot oil, they put you. And then also they give you a body, a subtle body, which can tolerate the punishment. See, because otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be able to. But they give you a subtle body that's so strong that it can tolerate 1,000 times being put in oil and taken out. Oh, yeah. So there's all of that. And then there's heavens also, where these apsaras, where these beautiful girls are dancing. And then in heaven, you can just think apple and the apple will appear. Or you don't even have to think apple. Doesn't have to appear. You think apple and you get the taste of apple. You think mango, you get taste. And then you can have all these dancing girls and all the golden, you know, beds and everything. Yeah, all is that there. Depending on your amount of good deeds, your house can be very close to Indra, you know, who is the king of heaven. Or you may be in the slums of heaven, you know, depending. So you could be in the best heaven, or you could be in the lowest heaven. So yeah, all that is there.
We are brought up saying that, you know, if you do good deeds, you go to heaven and bad deeds. But then we also hear that once the body is gone, the Atma moves on and goes and places itself into another body. So where is there room to go to hell and heaven?
No, because it doesn't place itself right away. Somebody may get a body in a week, somebody may get it in 1,000 years. So it's not necessary that your body instantly goes, subtle body. No, it actually... stays in this zone called Bardo, which is a zone of limbo, and where it waits till the suitable body becomes, and while you're there, you are suffering and enjoying all your good and bad deeds, everything. There is a complete record of that is kept.
Then if I do all the good deeds, I'll tell God I don't want to come down.
No, again, but you have still have vasanas. See, if you have a lot of vasanas which are unfulfilled, you will come down, because you have this desire to acquire this. That's why they say don't have any strong desires for anything, only have desire for God. Then he will keep you with him. You say, I got you, I want you, I don't want to leave. But as long as you have a desire for anything, could be your dog, your cat, you know, any attachment, your child, your, you know, family, your wealth, your possessions, gold. You know, we have so many attachments. As long as you have those, you will be born again. So reduce all of them. We're not saying that you don't love people, but don't be so attached or dependent upon them. Love.
The vasana is impressions of previous birth and this birth also.
Yes, yes, yes. We add in this
memories.
Birth. Right. We add. You can add or subtract vasanas. You can add or subtract your vasanas. But you're born. The reason we all are born, because we have vasanas. If we didn't have vasanas, we wouldn't have been on this earth. So you came because you have vasanas. And the way not to come is not to develop new vasanas and exhaust existing vasanas through service, through love of God, through knowledge, and through meditation. That's how you dissolve vasanas.
So heaven and hell is here in our life also.
Yes.
Like even like after death, what happened? Nobody sees.
Nobody,
but
right.
In our life also, whatever karma we do,
yes.
We get the feeling of heaven or hell.
Right, right,
if
right.
We get scared. whether you are sleeping or in dream or whether you are living, if you get scared, this is a hell.
Yes.
If you are blessed, if you are happy, this
right.
is heaven.
Oh yeah, all actions, majority of them are rewarded or punished right here itself. There's very few left over. I always give the example, I've told about my patient, he's now passed away. He was so rich, his family owns the Bakersfield, California, and they own half of downtown, that whole I Street and all of that, they own so much. And this guy, when he was the head of the business, his favorite word was, you're fired. You know, he used to love to fire people, it made him very happy. Very happy. And he had this hereditary illness called Huntington's chorea, where by age 50 or 60, they all get this paralysis and they become bedridden. Now his brother, when he started getting this paralysis, he shot himself. He knew, I'm going to get sick, because his father, grandfather. But this guy didn't. And he suffered for almost 10 or 12 years just lying in bed. So miserable, because he was basically, he was alert, he knew what was happening, but he was paralyzed. And 10 or 12 years he suffered. We even put a feeding tube in him because he couldn't eat. And then they used to take him to the beach. You know, they say, oh, he loves to go to the beach. So they will transport him to the beach. He was so rich, his servants, his maid, his nurse, his nurse's aide, they all used to go. They used to pay for all of them to go to the beach. And this poor guy is lying in the bed and others are enjoying his money and enjoying the
kind of hell.
Yeah, that is a kind of hell. Yeah, and he was so rich, he had so much money. That's why he lived longer, because he had 24-hour nurses, he had 24-hour aides. People used to come and shave him, clean him. He never got bed sores, he never got sick, because he is so rich. A poor guy would have died sooner. So that's hell. You know, with all his money, he couldn't.
So after death, heaven and hell, that is a kind of symbolic that you will be put
yes.
into the oil. That's a symbolic that you should not do bad.
Right, right. But no, you're right. Heaven and hell is here. But they do describe, which may be just to scare us, but the fact is that no good deed goes unrewarded and no bad deed goes unpunished. So that is very clear. So whether it happens in this world or another world, doesn't matter.
Something bad just happened and then they will be rewarded later because it's a bad thing.
It could be, it's hard to tell. Generally, they have done something, that's why something bad is happening. It's nobody gets anything that they don't deserve, good or bad. But yeah, but maybe it's some like accident happened and maybe later on they may get rewarded. But nothing happens by accident. His law is perfect. Right.
I'll accept that cheerfully, whatever happens.
Mm-hmm.
That decides a lot of things too.
Right.
It could happen to you.
Right, right. You accept cheerfully. It becomes a lesson. Sometimes that helps you to grow. Adversity makes you a better person. So maybe the Lord is testing you, and so that he's giving you some sorrow so that you may grow. In fact, Draupadi or Kunti, she always said, give me sorrow, Bhagavan, so that I may never forget you. Because when I'm happy, I always never remember you. But when I'm sorrowful, I remember. So she used to ask for sorrow. So Krishna, always give me sorrow. Don't give me joy, because then I'll forget you. So the idea means we shouldn't forget him and everything. He's very kind and benevolent and he's there to help us. Just have to turn to him or her, you know, if you worship Mother Goddess, that either one. God is not only male, we have all the beautiful females here, Saraswati and Lakshmi and Durga and all. So.
Not that she's asking for more trouble.
We don't know what, but she told Krishna, she said, only give me only sorrows, don't give me joy, so I may never forget you. Yes.
Yeah, when we are happy, nobody says that, oh God.
You know, this is not sukh me sumiran sab kare, dukh me kare na koi. Jo dukh me sumiran kare, to dukh, sukh, sorry. Jo sukh me sumiran kare, to dukh kahe ko hoi. She said, people remember me in sorrow. They don't remember, people remember me in sorrow. They don't remember me in joy. But if you remembered me in joy, you would never have sorrow. So whether you're joyful or sorrowful, remember him. Then there would never be a sorrow. When you're remembering him, how can you be sorrowful?
The whole time Ananda.
Ananda.
Ananda,
yes.
Ananda.
Right, right.
Ananda.
Yeah, because we are Ananda. We are Satchit Ananda. That's who we are.
Because of our thinking, we are bringing into the sorrow.
Right. Now the prarabdha of this body you have to go through, whatever. Okay, we'll end. We do have lunch, so please stay and see you next week. Thank you so much for all the questions and comments. Really appreciate it. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.